you. So I'm going to be shifting gears a little bit, too, and telling you what I've been asked to talk about. It's a lot of information that you probably already know, but just to recap sort of the story of ACA and its implementation, and then going back in time a little bit and talking about Massachusetts, which was the precursor for ACA and what we've done there, and then touch on what's missing from the ACA, which you probably all know the answer to. I also have no financial relationships to disclose. Any other relationships, you can talk to me later, and I'll disclose those. So as I said, I'm going to do just a quick recap of the national picture and then talk about Massachusetts and then what's missing. And so as we all know, back on March 23rd of 2010, President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act into law. It requires most U.S. citizens to have health insurance. It also requires all states to have a health exchange, and we'll get into what changed from the original intent. And, of course, it originally asked for the expansion of Medicaid all across the country to all non-Medicare-eligible individuals under age 65, and also included that all eligible adults would be guaranteed a benchmark benefit of essential health benefits. That was something that also sort of got modified. It was originally intended to be a national benchmark, and then it became state by state. Other key provisions of ACA is that folks cannot be denied insurance because of pre-existing conditions. Health plans can't drop people from coverage when they get sick. Elimination of any lifetime caps on coverage, annual limits on coverage as well. The one that everyone sort of talked a lot about was allowing young adults to stay on their parents' health care plan until age 26. And again, as I mentioned, this inclusion of essential health benefits. And also, that it called for plans to include essential community providers, which is really our Ryan White providers, or some of those community-based providers. And then the key part, of course, is allowing federal subsidies to those with incomes between 100 and 400% of federal poverty level in the form of either subsidies or tax credits. Some of those essential health benefits that are on the list in most states that included this is obviously ambulatory services, emergency services. Let me get that arrow out of the way. Oops. Back. Maternity care, mental health, behavioral health services, prescription drugs, rehab services, lab services, and prevention services, as well as pediatric services. And, of course, again, you can see what's missing from that list is no oral health essential benefits. And when we compare sort of the Ryan White list of services and how they overlap with ACA, there's a list of Ryan White core services, which is something that the legislation requires most Part A and Part B programs to fund, and these are medical, clinical services. Then there are some non-clinical services, but there's an overlap in some of the Ryan White historically funded services, such as outpatient care, drug assistance, mental health and substance abuse, that overlap with ACA benefits. But then there's a range of other services that Ryan White provides which are really necessary to ensure that people stay in care and continue to do well. And those are services, everything from medical nutrition therapy, home-based care, but medical case management, which is a key feature to make sure that people are accessing all the services that are available to them. And then there's a range of other non-medical services such as peer support, food, transportation that we also provide that I think helps ensure that folks do well in care. The big Medicaid expansion, expanding eligibility for Medicaid by eliminating the disability requirement for those with incomes up to 138% of federal poverty level, and automatically enrolling all U.S. citizens who would now be automatically eligible for Medicaid, including those who have been in the U.S. more than 5 years. And then the big incentive to states was that the federal government would pay 100% of the cost through 2016 and then 90% of the cost thereafter. Seems like a pretty enticing deal. But, of course, as we all know, lots of states decided to turn their back on those funds. And then based on the Supreme Court decision, states now have the option of expanding their Medicaid program or not. So this is the current picture of who has expanded and who hasn't. I didn't quite see what changed, but this is, I believe, the most up-to-date one. There used to be one that had 27 expansion states. There are now 28, including D.C., that are expanded their Medicaid program to all those adults who are eligible. There are 21 states who have chosen not to expand the Medicaid program, and then two states that are apparently still debating whether to do it or not. So now, sort of backtracking to Massachusetts, and we sort of predated the ACA. So I want to talk about the history of our expanded coverage for both people living with HIV, Medicaid expansion, healthcare reform. I'm not going to touch too much on the investment in outreach and enrollment, but we'll talk about the impact of the expansion on health outcomes. And so this is starting way back in 1997, and part of my message when I talk about this is that it really is a slow process, both in terms of getting these programs up and running, and so even though states are implementing ACA, they're not going to see an immediate shift in terms of the impact of ACA expansion on the need for other services. But back in 97 is when Massachusetts first received a Medicaid waiver to expand their program and operate its own version of Medicaid, which was called MassHealth. And then way back in 2001, we applied as a state for a Medicaid 1115 waiver specifically for HIV-positive folks. And so starting in 2001 in Massachusetts, Medicaid was expanded to people living with HIV who did not have AIDS yet and therefore did not have a disability yet, up to 200% of federal poverty levels. All those folks with HIV who fell in that category were now entitled to Medicaid to pay for their early intervention and health services. And again, things started slowly. Initially, there were only 200 people that were enrolled in the program. That has grown to over 1,400 people and over $20 million of Medicaid money being expended on that group of folks who are below 200% of FPL. 2006 is when we implemented healthcare reform, also known as Romney Care. And that further expanded coverage for all citizens, but also for people with HIV. Expanded the Medicaid program further. The same things that we see in the federal law, elimination of pre-existing conditions, creation of a health insurance exchange, which was known as the Massachusetts Health Connector, the individual and employer mandate, subsidies for the purchase of insurance were all implemented in Massachusetts and then became part of the national picture. A couple of things that are unique to Massachusetts, though, is we did maintain a health safety net with state funds for non-eligible residents or those who are document challenged. So there are resources as well for even folks who may not qualify for any of the federal resources. And then also sort of codified into law the automatic eligibility for all people living with HIV who are below 200% of the FPL. So some other key elements of our Massachusetts healthcare reform. Completely subsidized comprehensive health insurance for adults earning up to 150% of federal poverty level. Substantial premium subsidies were available for people between 150% and 300% of federal poverty level. There were reforms to help lower the cost for insurance for those who didn't fall into those categories. And then again, this requirement that all adults had to have insurance and document that they had insurance if they could. And again, as I mentioned, we also included this health safety net for all those residents who may have been below 400% of poverty level but didn't qualify for any other coverage. And again, state funds were used for that program. Specifically, when you look at people with HIV, what that meant is, again, all those who were below 200% of poverty level were eligible for Medicaid. Those who were between 2% and 300% of FPL were able to purchase subsidized insurance through our health insurance connector. Those who were over 300% could purchase non-subsidized programs, and now under ACA that's expanded, so now those between 3% and 400% can use the tax credits to help offset the cost of insurance. But our ADAP program, our drug assistance program, it has an eligibility requirement of anyone at 500% or below of poverty level can get assistance from our ADAP program, which includes not just purchasing drugs, but we will purchase people's insurance plans, because that's more affordable, and we will also purchase co-pays for their medications. And so the part of the impact of all of this is, according to an estimate by our Division of Healthcare Finance Policy, 98.1% of all residents in Massachusetts are insured. And one of the estimates I've heard is that since the ACA implementation, we've been able to, despite lots of issues with our web page too, that basically trying to get the web page to match the federal web page, broke the system. But even with that, we've been able to carve out another 1%. So some of the more recent estimates I've seen is that 99% of all residents now have insurance. And so the impact of all that coverage and the way we've used Orion White money to help make sure people stay in care, has really meant a huge impact on healthcare and health impact. So we've, unlike Florida, we've actually seen a reduction in new HIV diagnoses. Our diagnoses have declined by 45% between 2000 and 2009, so few people are getting infected. Based on a survey that we've done both with our Part B program, the results show that people are reporting that they are receiving care, that they, up to 92% of folks have documented in their charts that they have two or more medical visits. Move on a little bit. But again, over 90% of folks are saying that they are on ARVs. 72% of respondents say that they are currently virally suppressed. Also, we've finally just done, at the state level, the state has finally done a HIV care continuum for the state. They haven't released it yet, although I do have a picture of it on my phone if you want to see it. But it shows that we have a 65% viral suppression rate compared to that 25% national figure. Real quickly, I won't go over these charts because of time, but essentially fewer people in Massachusetts compared to the rest of the country are getting HIV. Folks are living longer than the rest of the country and dying less than the rest of the country. And part of I think, what has led to those outcomes is the way we've used our Ryan White money over time. We've used less and less of our Part A dollars for medical care and more for all those services that help keep people in care, like medical case management, food and transportation. The one exception being, because there's no dental care coverage, we've had to use more and more of our money for oral health care as well. This, I know this is hard to read, but is just meant to show you how we allocate our dollars. And essentially, we have less and less money going for drugs. We have no money in primary care anymore, no money in mental health, no money in outpatient substance abuse, because those are all covered by Medicaid. And the sites that we could fund were not Medicaid eligible. So it's much more the oral health, housing, medical case management, some peer support, and other support services. So what's missing? Adult dental care. It's not an ACA essential health benefit. And even in Massachusetts, despite all those advances I've talked about, when it came down to a budget crunch back in 2010, adult dental care was drastically cut. And in the past, even when there was some exceptions for special populations, including those with HIV, that no longer was the case. So dramatic cuts in adult dental care, some restoration since then, piecemeal approach, but nothing comprehensive. And so the demand on our HIV program, dental program, has continued to grow. We've had double our funding since 2005, and so we're now allocating $1.2 million even before our state dollars. And then across the country, again, you can see there's very little, no states that have full coverage for dental care. Some that have a mix, but with caps. Much more of the states have very limited coverage, and many states have just emergency coverage or no coverage at all. And this just provides a definition of those categories. Oh, so I'm actually at my last page. So I just... getting there'd be no handouts, but when this is online, just some web links for more information where we got some of our information as well. So that's the history of ACA, Massachusetts, the precursor to it, but the one missing element is coverage for adult dental care. Thank you.